friends and listeners from around the world. It's great to have you with us. Thank you for tuning in. This is Red Eyes Radio, and I'm Henrik Palmgren from the land of the Goths and Vikings in the southwest of Sweden, a country in grave distress. I hope you are well wherever you are and that conditions are livable. If not, I hope you're doing everything you can to change those conditions and help in the struggle against the elite's planned destruction of our world as they move us towards the chaos that they seek in order to bring the order that they want. Our guest today is author Harry Cooper from Shark Hunters to discuss his new book, Hitler in Argentina. This is a continuation of the investigations that we've made regarding the claim that Hitler survived the bunker and went to South America. We've done a couple of programs on this topic in the past that we recommend that you check out, and you can find those on redicecreations.com, and of course our full archives you have on redicemembers.com. The book is filled with witness testimony, ex-spy and military whistleblowers, research and photographs from many of the locations and areas that Harry visited while doing research for this series of books on this interesting topic. Cooper has worked on this for 2.5 decades with dozens of trips to Germany, Austria, the Soviet Union, Russia, and since 2008, 4 expeditions to Argentina, Chile, and Brazil, where he found the remains of the nuclear research facility in a remote part of Argentina that was built in 1947. That's 2 years after the war ended, and this was allegedly built by German scientists as well. We'll talk about this and many other topics contained in the book. Stay with us, much more ahead. And welcome, Harry Cooper. Thanks for coming on the program with us. We really appreciate it. Hope you're doing well today.
Everything's going well, and I hope things are going well over there in Sweden.
Oh, definitely. The anti-European Union, but pro-nationalist parties over here in Europe have finally actually picked up and gotten some votes. So I think that the road towards sovereignty actually is a bit brighter today.
I've been watching that on the news, and it's looking like the pendulum is swinging very strongly to the right.
It is, and I mean, they usually demonize it by saying that it's all, you know, right-wing or whatever. They can call it what they want, but the fact is that this is democracy in action, right? This is what the people want, and all the major parties in Europe has failed the people, and that's why this is happening, and I'm not surprised anyway.
Yeah, I stay out of other countries' politics, but it's easy to see why the pendulum is swinging back to the right, and maybe someday in this country we will wake up over here, but that's another whole story.
It is. Of course, we're here to talk about a completely different story here in terms of the work that you guys have been doing. You know, the Hitler in Argentina, the whole Shark Hunter story. This is a fascinating story. It always is, this topic. And I thought we could just kind of talk about some of the background here first before we go into the meat of the book, of course. But tell us about Shark Hunters and what Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group is.
Okay, Shark Hunters is, I founded Shark Hunters in 1983 to study the history of the World War II German U-boats, and it came by a real fluke. I was just a normal business executive, and on the side I raced Grand National stock cars. I drove the super speedways. And one day, my last race was the Texas 500 in 1976, way back, a long time ago. I was in the lead group with A.J. Foyt, Bobby Unser, Al Unser, Gordy Johncock, et cetera, and I blew the engine in my race car. Coming home to Chicago, where I lived at the time, blew the engine in my truck, and I got to work and found my boss had quit, and a fellow that I couldn't get along with was my new boss. So I just quit, sold everything I owned, bought a 30-foot sailboat, put an ad in the boating magazines for female crew companion to go to the islands. And I got over 200 replies, and I left Chicago with a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead who were 24, 24, and 25 years old, and I was 40. And we sailed off to the Bahamas. While we were in the Bahamas, I ran across an island that had been a plantation during the war years, and the old caretaker told me that they had given some fresh water and some food to some German U-boats during the war. And, of course, my first reaction was those dirty Nazis, because that's what we were taught. Germans were all Nazis. They prayed to Hitler because they hated God. They machine gun people in the water for sport. So I tucked that all in the back of my head because I had other things on my mind, like Karen, Lynette, and Debbie, my three girls.
Yeah.
And finally, after some years, I ran out of money. I came home, went back to work, and started to research and found out this was propaganda. It was not true. They were not raving lunatics. They didn't murder people in the water. The U-boat, the men of the U-boat Waffe were very honorable, very decent. And in the early stages, when they'd sink ships, they would help the survivors in the water. And so I started publishing a monthly, well, it was only a newsletter at that time. It's a magazine now, because I felt that the guys who fought honorably like that and suffered the worst casualty rate of any military force ever in the history of warfare, one man out of seven came home. So that's how we started that. And then some years ago, we started learning about the submarines in Argentina, the black boats, as they're called, the ones who didn't exist officially.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, the nice thing about Shark Hunters, we have subscribers, members in 76 countries, and some of them are researchers also. So we have formed a network. We also had another group called Eagle Hunters, which we've incorporated into Shark Hunters. That's some of the history of the flyboys, the Luftwaffe and all the air forces. So we call our agents SEIG agents, S-E-I-G. It stands for Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group. And these people are incredibly good at what they do. Some of them are former spooks themselves, you know, agents. One of our agents is a police officer, and he went into the National Archives, 5 years ago, I guess it was, 6 years maybe, and he almost lived there for a couple of weeks, finding all sorts of files that the archivists didn't even know they had, and files that pertained to Hitler escaping to Argentina. He then had the files declassified, and we got copies of them. We've got hundreds of files from the FBI that say the FBI knew Hitler and Eva Braun and Martin Bormann and many, many others had gotten out and were living in South America. So we just pursued it, and unlike so many other researcher, authors, whatever you want to call them, I don't just do it on paper. I go there. I go to Germany every year, anywhere from 1 to 5 times a year, and Austria also. Mm-hmm. I've been to Argentina 4 times so far, and to that secret island you read about in the book, Trindade, not to be confused with Trinidad, where there was a supply station there for fresh water and fresh food after the war was over, 2 years running after the end of the war, at least 2 years. And prior to the outbreak of the war, the Brazilians pulled their Navy people off the island, and German supply people replaced them on the island. They built 2 radio towers that were about 80 meters tall, and the scientific flotilla headed by the catapult ship Schwabenland stopped there for some time on their way down to map out their claim in Argentina, Neue Schwabenland. So that's how we got it started.
Yeah, it's a big story. There's so many components to it, and of course what has happened consequently, and there's many things I want to get into here. But if there's something you could mention about what you, I mean, there's so many aspects to it, but what would be the most... there's so much disinformation, so much propaganda flying around, as it always is in all warfare. As we know, the victors, they write the history, and what everyone has been learned consequently is a skewed version of history, of course. But what are some of the most, you know, points that you discovered along the way that was the most shocking to you, the things that you had heard previously and discovered weren't true? Can you run through some of those for us?
Well, early on, like as I said, I found out early on that the U-boaters were not the raving maniacs we were told. I was a kid during the war years. And they didn't hate God and pray to Hitler. They were not Nazis. The guys in the Kriegsmarine were not allowed to belong to any political party. But while in South America, one of the biggest surprises I got was I'd be asking these old people who were there and saw everything, and they'd ask me why I was doing this. I'd tell them because I'm trying to prove that Adolf Hitler lived out his life in South America. And they'd look at me like I had three heads, you know. They'd say, well, what's the big question? We knew he lived here. So that was some of the surprises, and also the theory that we came to about why nobody went after him, which you read in the book. That was also a surprise, you know. Everybody, well, let me back up a step. When I was, during the war years, when I was a kid, the United States was fighting against Germany, Italy, and Japan. And then halfway through the war, when it was obvious we were going to win, then we were fighting Hitler, Tojo, and Mussolini. It had been personalized.
Yeah.
So that at the end of the war, the countries could be rebuilt, but the three leaders there were supposedly the bad guys. There's no question what happened to Mussolini. He got hanged up by his heels and machine gunned. Tojo shot himself, didn't do the job right. The U.S. nursed him back to health and then hanged him. But Hitler, the one that the propaganda says was the worst of them all, he got away. And I'm guessing it would be very embarrassing for the victorious Allies to say that he got away. So that's part of why. But also, as you read in the book, I think there was a deal struck. I have no proof of it, but there's an awful lot of smoke, so there must be some fire somewhere.
Well, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about what happened there. I guess we can go from the bunker and all the way up to how he ended up in Argentina. What did you find?
Well, he got out of the bunker, according to Don Angel, who was the spy who worked for the SS intelligence, the Sicherheitsdienst. He saw Hitler being forcibly drugged under orders of Martin Bormann and removed from the bunker, the same with Eva Braun. He wanted to keep the Reich alive. Hitler, by then, was pretty much of a broken man. He was suffering from all sorts of maladies, but Bormann was always the opportunist, and he wanted Hitler saved as the figurehead. And Don Angel saw with his own eyes, as you saw in the book there, Don Angel saw that Hitler and Eva Braun were forcibly drugged under Martin Bormann's orders and removed from the bunker. Then in 1952, he was sent down to meet with Hitler and show him a dossier he was keeping on two children who were living in the town of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and he had about 60 photos. We don't know who the children are. There's a lot of theory and suppositions. They might have been Hitler's children. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. We don't know. But the boy's name was Adolfo, and the girl's name was Stern, which is, as you know, German for star.
Yeah.
Adolfo was, I think, 16 years old in 1951 or 52. One of our agents is the former school board chief, or the director of schools in Las Cruces at that time, and he's digging through the files now to find out if he can find who was Stern and Adolfo, and if so, then we'll try to find them and contact them.
Indeed. Now, tell us a little bit about some of the sources that you guys have gotten your hands on as well, and where you kind of gleaned some of the material from. Is this something that has been easily accessible? Some things, of course, have been just handed to you personally, right, by insiders and like the former spy, etc. Is that the prime material where that comes from?
Yeah, pretty much. When Don Angel, well, his full name is Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco.
Yeah.
When he joined Shark Hunters in 1985, He had sent me, I think he was a member for about 1 year, and we had established a rapport. And he had sent me a typewritten letter. It was 114 pages long, single-spaced, typewritten, that all these facts that went into the book, that he had seen Hitler removed, that he met with Hitler in 1952. And I kind of put it on the shelf because everybody knows Hitler committed suicide because you're told that's what you're supposed to believe. And then in that was 1986, I think. Then in 1988, we were visited by another one of our members, Captain Robert Thew, T-H-E-W, who was Naval Intelligence his whole Navy career, and then later was NSA. And I asked him if he had ever heard of Don Angel, and he said, oh, sure, we knew he was a German agent. And I said, well, this guy must be nuts, I said, because he sent me this letter and told me that Hitler didn't commit suicide, that he got away. And I said, everybody knows Hitler committed suicide in the bunker. And just as calmly as could be, Captain Bob said, no, he didn't. We knew he got away. I said, who is we? And he said, the intelligence community. We knew Hitler got away. So the NSA knew it. The FBI knew it. Naval Intelligence knew it. Also, Joseph Stalin was publicly screaming at England and the United States that we were not doing enough to find Hitler. And this was in July of 1945, and the alleged suicide was 30th of April. So if the guy's dead and you've got his body, why are you pushing other people to look for him?
Yeah.
And, you know, the answer is they knew he didn't get killed.
So tell us a little bit more about the motivation behind that and why, you know, the deal that you talked about and why they allowed him to get away. Why didn't they not chase him down consequently? What happened there?
Right, that's a good point. Because, you know, like I say, Mussolini and Tojo, they were caught. And so when people ask me, well, why didn't they chase him? I ask, well, who is they? And they stumble and they don't know. And then they say, well, Israel. And I remind them there was no such place as Israel in 1945. That came along in 48.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the Mossad. Well, the Mossad, if it even existed, was very small in those days. And then they asked, well, why didn't the U.S. go after them? And that's a valid question. My theory, as I laid out in the book, my career field in the Air Force was thermonuclear weapons, special weapons. And I was in intensive school from January until June of 1958, learning all about nuclear weapons. And the early stages of the school, we saw the films of the American atom bomb experiments and building the bomb, etc. And we were not doing very well. We were struggling. And according to the book, Japan's Secret War, written by Robert Wilcox, who's also a member. According to that book, Japan test-fired their first nuclear device 1 week before the U.S. test-fired ours. And everybody was short on fissionable material. Well, at the end of the war, a German submarine, U-234 was the number, under Captain Lieutenant Johann Heinrich Thaler, surrendered to the U.S., you know, because they got the surrender order. He surrendered to the U.S., and they brought the boat into Portsmouth Naval Base in New Hampshire. And it had all sorts of goodies on board, two ME-262 jet fighters in crates with the technological information to rebuild them, General Ulrich Kessler and his staff from the Luftwaffe, many scientists, including Heinz Schlicker, who later joined Shark Hunters, and his area of expertise was designing the triggers for nuclear bombs. And the submarine also had 560 kilos of uranium on board. Now, this uranium suddenly disappeared. Nobody knows where it went, and researchers have tried to find it. There's no paper trail. The paper has disappeared. The uranium has disappeared. But all of a sudden, right around that same time, the United States nuclear weapons program took a giant leap forward, as did our expertise in rocketry and jet planes, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it's my conclusion that the deal was struck. Germany gave us all this high-tech equipment, information, et cetera, and we would let Hitler just live out his life in peace down in Argentina. That's one leg. The other leg of the story, Juan Perón was getting so much money from primarily from Martin Bormann. In 1945, at the end of the war, Juan Perón was a colonel without any property and with very little money. 2 years later, he was president of Argentina. He was incredibly wealthy, and he was a general. He got that money from primarily Bormann. And so these guys that escaped down there were pretty much under protection of the Argentine government, headed by Juan Perón. And guys like Eichmann didn't have a lot of money, and so he couldn't buy the protection. And I also think maybe he was kind of thrown to the wolves to let the Mossad get him to keep him off other people's trail. I saw where he lived. The house is demolished now, but saw pictures of the house. It was about 20 feet by 20 feet that he built with his two sons. He rode a bus 3 hours each way every day to work in the Mercedes factory. So he didn't have the money for his protection. Yet Mengele, nobody got Mengele. He was buddies with Perón. He owned three homes in Argentina. I was at two of them. One of them had the back garden touching the back garden of Juan Perón's presidential home. So it wasn't that they could be easily grabbed. The Mossad came in with five or six guys to grab Eichmann, and nobody cared. It would not be possible for them to get next to people like Mengele or Bormann or the others that had huge influence and a lot of money. The only way anybody could have come in to get Hitler would be for full-scale assault, which would be declaring war on Argentina, and nobody, by 1945, people were pretty tired of war.
Right. Exactly. It has been a long-standing battle at that point. A lot of human beings, young men and old and young, you know, murdered in this atrocity of the Second World War and everything that bloomed up because of everything that's been going on from the First World War and onwards, of course, you know?
Right. Well, it even touched our family. My mother's cousin was killed in the Pacific. He was on the destroyer escort, USS England, when a kamikaze hit, and it hit right where my mom's cousin was standing, and they never found even his shoelaces.
Yeah.
So everybody suffered. I don't know if anybody won the war.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody wins a war, and it may sound a little bit liberal coming from me, but there's no war I can think of the United States has ever been in that was for any reason other than financial gain.
Well, exactly.
That's another whole direction.
Well, exactly. No, but it's a good point, though. I mean, and that's how it is. We're faced with a scenario. If we inspect history closely enough, we realize that there are indeed powerful forces behind the scenes pulling the strings to pit nations and peoples against each other, you know, and it's very unfortunate in that regard. So I agree with you. Now, tell us a bit more about certain people that seems to have been handed over, if you will, and certain people protected in this deal here. What about someone like, well, actually, before we go there, I was going to ask a little bit more about like Simon Wiesenthal and the Nazi hunters and all this, right? So, but before we talk about that, how long is it expected that Hitler and, you know, Bormann and some of these people lived in Argentina?
Well, we believe Hitler passed away in 1962 or 1963. As of 2002, we had indications that Eva Braun was still alive. which is not such a big deal because she was born 1912. That would have made her only 90 years old. I say only 90 years old,
yeah.
But my grandfather's older sister was 104 when she died. Captain Hartigan, the guy who sank the first ship in American waters, just had his 101st birthday last March.
Wow.
So people are living pretty long, and for Eva Braun to live to 90 years old at least is not out of the question.
Well, indeed, exactly. So why is it, do you think, that people like Simon Wiesenthal hasn't gone after some of this? Have they even known about this, or have they bought the lie that Hitler died in the bunker as well? What do you think?
That I don't know, so anything I would say would just be a guess. I don't know what Simon Wiesenthal knew and why he didn't go after Hitler if he knew Hitler was alive down there. My guess is it probably would not have been very safe. If you remember, in 1995, Sam Donaldson, the American journalist, the guy that had a fiberglass wig, his hair was never out of place. It looked like it was molded plastic. He went down to San Carlos de Bariloche, and he ultimately stumbled on Erich Priebke, who also lived to 100 years old. He died just a couple months ago. And Priebke didn't have anybody protecting him, and so he was deported back to Italy, where he was tried in a military court and found not guilty of anything wrong, came back to Bariloche, but then there was some pressure from other sources to go after him again, so they brought him back for a civilian court. He was found guilty, and he was confined to an apartment in Rome with some pretty good-looking Carabinieri guards. I've seen some of the girls who were guarding him. I don't think that was such a punishment. But then some guys from the Mossad went back down to Bariloche, and from what I understand, they had an accident. Doggone accidents sneak up on you from anywhere.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more here about, obviously we know about the Vatican rat lines. We have Operation Paperclip. There's a number of these kind of official things out there flying around about, you know, how many people got away, and of course what you mentioned before, that the very technological build-up was kind of built on previous achievements by the National Socialists in Germany there. But were this operation under any of this kind of official, documented project to take Hitler out, or is this just completely kind of undercover, underground stuff? There's no documentation, per se, about this beyond the witnesses and people who have seen this kind of stuff, that Hitler got away.
We have not found any documentation as yet, and if there was any, my guess is it was disposed of. Like, as I say, the 560 kilos of uranium that came off of that submarine, nobody knows where it went. There's no paper trail. The paper all disappeared. We have a copy of the items on the submarine, and it says 560 kilos of uranium. It also itemizes all the jet planes and stuff that was on there. That's the last anybody's been able to find any paper trail on this uranium. Where did it go?
Yeah.
I think we know where it went. I think the U.S. Air Force delivered it to Hiroshima in the form of the Hiroshima bomb, but there's no proof. There's no paper trail. That has all disappeared. Either it was all by verbal orders, or any paper trail has been picked up and destroyed. And so anything to do with Hitler in Argentina, if there was anything official. Now, there's a fellow named Jeff Rentz has a radio show here in the United States. Right. And he said that he knows pilots, U.S. Air Force pilots, Army Air Force pilots, who were ferrying German, high-ranking German people down to Argentina after the war in U.S. Air Force planes. So, but where's the paper trail?
Yeah.
It was either all verbal orders or the paper has been destroyed.
Well, exactly. Now, let's back up a little bit more. I just realized we might be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Some of our audience might be you know, kind of jumping up and down here and saying, what are you talking about? There might be a lot of, there's a lot of evidence that, that you know, what is claimed to happen to Hitler is real, etc. What speaks against the suicide claim of Hitler and the bunker and everything else? We have basically the day after, right, the Red Army marched into Berlin, you know, and claimed that certain things have been found, etc., right? There's certain, but the body overall is missing. Some evidence has been presented, but it hasn't been conclusive. There's been a lot of back and forth on this issue for a long time. But in your view, what speaks against the official story here? So we just kind of cover that base before we move forward.
Oh, sure. As you say, there's a lot of back and forth, but when you come right down to it, when you look at the hard evidence, as opposed to the propaganda evidence, it's a pretty easy decision to come to. People get so emotional and wound up with propaganda. Oh, you're an idiot. You know, everybody knows. I ran into a U.S. Army colonel. Oh, you're an idiot, Cooper. Everybody knows Hitler committed suicide in the bunker. And I said, yeah, well, where's the proof? Well, everybody knows it. I tell him, yeah, well, everybody knows that on Christmas Eve, a fat guy in a red suit's going to come down your chimney with a bag full of toys, but that don't make it true. The skull, I'm sure you know, the skull was tested by an independent forensic pathologist a couple of years ago, the fragment of skull with the bullet hole in it that they said was Hitler's, and it turned out to be the skull of a younger woman. So that's no proof there. Also, the three guys who testified, the three SS majors, Linge, Kempke, and Günsche. Günsche was a member of Shark Hunters. They all saw the suicide. But then when they come down to telling the story, no, they didn't see it. Two of them said they heard a gunshot. The third one said he smelled gunpowder smoke. So when they each were interrogated, the time of the death varied as much as 3 hours from one witness to another.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when they went into the chamber, there was a discrepancy of who went in with each one of these guys. Also, one guy said that Abel Braun was sitting on the end of the sofa, and Hitler was sitting on the other end of the sofa, but as he slumped over, his arm hit a vase of flowers, and Abel Braun's dress was wet from the flowers. Another guy said that Abel Braun was laying on the sofa, and Hitler was sitting in a chair across the room. Now, come on, you know, you might disagree on whether he had three buttons or four buttons on his suit coat, but was he sitting on the sofa, or was he sitting on the chair on the other side of the room?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two, Linge and Kempke, they died of natural causes, I assume natural causes, shortly after the war, within a few years, some years. But Günsche was in great physical shape. He was still a big man, 6 foot something, almost 2 meters, whatever that comes out to. I'm not good at metric.
All right.
But finally, his wife passed away, and we think then he felt there was no sword hanging over his head, and he was getting ready to speak about that day. He had his 88th birthday, and people who were there said he was in his usual great physical shape. He was in good spirits, etc. And 1 week later, his housekeeper found him in the sauna. At 9 o'clock in the morning, he had been there from 3 o'clock the previous afternoon, and the temperature was set at 85 degrees Celsius. So, Did he really want to cook himself in the sauna, or was there something else? We'll never know.
Exactly. Yep, there's a lot of interesting inconsistencies when one begins to examine this kind of history. And of course, a lot of people, you're right, I mean, it's such an emotional issue for a lot of people that they seem to kind of run with it and not really have the rationale about them in this regard. So after Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun was taken care of by Bormann, they were sedated, they were ready to be, you know, taken away from Germany, basically. What happened next? How were they transported out of Germany, and where did they go as a next step here? How much is known here?
Right now, that's kind of in a fog. We are about 90% certain they were flown out to Spain. There are several of the big aircraft that are missing. There were three of the giant Ju-390s built, but only one of them was in operating order at the end of the war, and it disappeared. It wound up in Uruguay, but we don't think Hitler and Eva Braun were aboard that. There were a couple of the Ju-290s, the big four-engine planes that could go a long distance, that wound up missing. We have the charts of the airfield where these planes took off from. They were surrounded by the Soviets, and as the ring was closing up on them, these aircraft disappeared. The one, the Ju-390, we believe had the so-called Nazi Bell on board it,
uh-huh.
And it went down to South America. But as for Hitler and Eva Braun, most likely from submarine, because many, many, many submarines and tramp steamers, and even there was a 90-ton sailing boat that came out of Villa Garcia, which is a fishing town up the river from Vigo, Spain. And that's where Don Angel and Martin Bormann left from. That's also one of the ends of the so-called rat line. So lots of people came down, and they stopped at this island Trinidad, about, 1,000 kilometers off Rio de Janeiro, for fresh water and food. I've been on this island. It's a small island, maybe 2.5 miles long by 1.5 miles wide, but it goes up to 3,000 feet. And it's just loaded with freshwater streams, so fresh water is abundant. They had herds of pigs and goats on the island, as well as sea turtles. So if somebody needed fresh food, just take some pigs and goats. And they were there, German supply people were there, until at least June of 1947. They got there in July of 1945, a couple of months after the surrender.
Wow, that long, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
Brazil had to have been complicit, because in 1939, they pulled their people off the island. They keep 2 or 3 dozen sailors on the island just to raise the flag every morning and take it down every night and show that they own 200 miles of fishing around there. And in 1939, they pulled their people off the island, and within 1 week, the ship Schwabenland and her support ships arrived there. They built the radio towers, etc. You saw pictures of one of the buildings there. You also, in my book, you also saw a picture, 1939 photograph, of the area that they took from the Schwabenland. Then in June of 41, I think it was June of 41, in 41, the Germans left, the Brazilian Navy came back, and there's a large rock that they have made as sort of a memorial that says 1941, indicating when they came back. Then, shortly after Germany surrendered, they pulled their people off the island again, and a German sailor was killed in an accident, July of 1945, on that island. The war had ended in May, so what's this German sailor doing on the island in July? We found a rock, a big rock, a boulder, where somebody had painted 717 on it. Which would be the 17th of July, I guess. But it's pretty well faded by now. and the the island has very little topsoil, not very deep, with a lot of rock underneath it, and so the heavy storms have even washed away the little cemetery that was there. Very interesting island.
Very interesting. What, was there something else? How many times were you there, you said? Once?
I was on the island only once.
Yeah.
You can only go there with the permission and with the assistance of the Brazilian Navy, and they were just absolutely super with me. They took me out on one of their ships, an LST, a refurbished LST. They treated me so well. They're just wonderful people in the Brazilian Navy. And boy, do they have a Navy. I didn't realize their Navy was that big. They are the ass kickers of South America. Boy, they got one powerful Navy.
Really? Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that either. Now, so where did they ask you what you were, did they know what you were doing there? Kind of?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I let them know up front. There was no secrets.
Yeah.
And they gave me the run of the island. They they did have this one younger fella. Well, everybody's younger than me, I guess. They had this one younger fella sticking with me, and I thought maybe he was a spy or something, wondering what I was doing. And I asked him. No, he was the Navy doctor, and he wanted to be on hand in case I keeled over.
That's funny. Now, so. Who was, do you think, enabled the complicity here that we talked about, the not when you were there, but during the time when the Germans came there, the Brazilian had to, you know, they had to allow this in some way, of course. Is it the Vatican influence here that's connected with this, do you think, or how's the deal struck?
That's a good question. We haven't dug into that one very deeply, but at the end of the war, just before the war ended, I'm sorry, the last 5 or 6 weeks, there was a Navy maneuver called Operation Mercator, in which Gross Admiral Dönitz sent about 24 of his long-range Type 9C submarines to operate off the American coast, and almost 100 of his Type 7C boats to operate all around England. And yes, they did have that many. We listed all the numbers. You saw them in the book. And some of the skippers were members of Shark Hunters and friends of mine. What this did was pull all the submarine activity out of the Middle Atlantic and up against the east coast of the United States and also around England. So that pulled all the anti-submarine ships off the water. And so they're down to 30th Meridian. There was a superhighway about 300 or 400 miles wide on either side where there was no Allied shipping at all. And for a couple of weeks, anybody, ships, whatever, airplanes could go down there without fear of being detected. And also, if you look at your map, the 30th Meridian goes almost right through the island of Trinidad.
Hmm.
A lot of facts come together. It's like putting a puzzle together.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I know. Now, why did Don Angel decide to speak out about this contact or you know, initiate this kind of process that he began here? Have you do you know more about that?
You mean why did he tell us?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was trying to get his story out, and nobody would believe him. And so he and I developed a friendship through the mail. And so I told him that I didn't really believe his story at first. And then, as I say, I talked to Captain Bob Thew. Then also there was a point where I thought I had caught him in a lie, because he said that on the 20th and 21st of April, 1945, Admiral Dönitz was there in the Führer bunker, and I didn't think this was possible because I thought by that time the Red Army had totally encircled Berlin. So I asked Captain Peter Erich Kramer, otherwise known as Ali Kramer, commander of U-333, Knight's Cross holder. He was a member of Shark Hunters. And I called him up, asked him if Dönitz had been in the Führer bunker at any time in April of 45. I didn't tell him a date. He said, nope, absolutely not possible. So I figured, okay, we caught Don Angel in a lie. And if a person lies one time, you never can believe them. Well, then, about 4 days later, I got an excited call back from Captain Kramer. He had consulted his personal diary. Admiral Dönitz was there on those dates, and the ring of the Red Army had not totally closed Berlin yet at that point. So what Don Angel said was true, and then we checked various other points and found everything that we checked out was absolutely correct.
Hmm.
So he, I think he was just trying to get his story out.
Right, yeah. Well, exactly. There's a lot to this. Now, before we take a break here in a little bit, there's much more, of course, in the next segment I want to get into in terms of, well, you mentioned the bell, of course. That's a very interesting issue in itself, but even what happened in Argentina, how they set things up there, and if they kind of had a colony. There's various areas here where people have been down and trying to visit and see and what actually happened to potential descendants, etc. It's a very interesting story here. But why don't we give out some of the details here, Harry, where people can go to pick up copies of the book, to read more about your work and follow along and everything. And, give us the details where we can go for more.
Okay. If they're in the United States, they can just place the order with us, sharkhunters.com, or a direct email is sharkhunters@earthlink.net. Or if you're any other country, you're better off getting it through Amazon, because the United States Post Office isn't worth diddly anymore, and when we try to send them overseas, it takes forever, and it costs a lot of money to send it overseas. So, ordering, if you're any other country other than the United States, you're best getting them from Amazon. If they come in the United States through Shark Hunters, they're all hand signed. That makes the book worth about 5 cents more. But we can get them to people quickly in the United States. Outside the United States, it's not easy. We're negotiating with a French publisher and also with a German publisher to get the book translated and published in those countries, but that's sometime in the future.
All right, very good. Of course, the website here again is sharkhunters.com. And you can find out much more there. And the book we're talking about, of course, is it's from the Hitler Escape trilogy, specifically Hitler in Argentina. We have much more to discuss in the second here. And we're going to have all the links, by the way, up on our website as well, so you can click through easily from there. All right, well, stay with us, Harry. We'll be right back with more, and we'll continue the story on the other side. Thank you. We are going to do what we do, pick this up and continue our conversation with Harry Cooper in the second hour at redicemembers.com, our members' website where we have our full archives together with the video material, films, commentary, and much more in the works. We have much more to discuss about other Nazi expeditions, survivors from the war, what has happened to them, and where are they today. We also talk about some of the locations that Harry visited, and I guess where he seeks to go next to find further clues on how to resolve some of the mysteries surrounding this story. We have upcoming on the program Don Park from Sweden, the artist, the street artist, who was arrested forcefully by the authorities because of his, quote, offensive art, unquote. Very interesting and telling interview. We also have Frank Salter, Joseph P. Farrell, Joseph Atwill, and many more. We have some really good stuff in the pipeline coming up on many of the vital issues that are plaguing us today. So please stay tuned to redicecreations.com. And redicemembers.com. You can stream or download from both websites. We'll be right back after the break. More with Harry Cooper is coming up. Thank you for listening.